entity and everything it is doing is illegitimate. There must be a limit put for Israel because Israel does not abide by any of the laws or human morality.
The situation has to do with the ongoing negotiations between Israel and Lebanon. These are called negotiations under fire in order to put pressure. What they did Thursday in Beqa, in the morning in Nabatia, then Thursday in Sor and Friday in Dahia. It's all to put pressure to achieve projects that benefit the Zionist enemy.
When the negotiations reached a certain point, some political pressure were placed so that the talks do not reach a comfortable place, neither for the Israeli enemy nor for the Lebanese. But we are tired. We are upset by the situation.
More Palestinian civilians are killed in Gaza as the Israeli military keeps pounding the blockaded territory with air and artillery attacks. The latest Israeli airstrikes at different areas, including the city of Deir al-Bala, the Nusayrat refugee camp, and al-Zawaida town in central Gaza overnight. At least 47 Palestinians lost their lives as a result. 26 of them were killed in Nusayrat camp, where two houses were struck. Israel began its genocidal war on Gaza in early October of last year. Since then, more than 43,200 Palestinians have been killed. Over 101,000 others have been injured. The total death toll is believed to be much higher, as many Gazans remain missing. Earlier, we were joined by journalist and activist Fra Hughes, who shared his thoughts on the recent Israeli bombing of Gaza's Kamal Adwan Hospital. Let's take a listen.
The Geneva Convention exempts schools and hospitals and universities and areas that are deemed to be safe refuges for people who are displaced because of the violence being visited upon them. And we have seen systematically Israel attack the universities, attack the schools, attack the UNRWA refugee centres, and attack the hospitals. And the idea behind this appears to be total war, the total destruction of the civilian infrastructure, the total destruction of the health sector, and the medicinal properties that are used potentially to give life-saving interventions to people who have been targeted, injured and maimed by this indiscriminate bombing, with 5,000 pound bombs that are being dropped in tents, are being dropped in residential buildings. The attack on the hospital itself is unconscionable, but the fact that they waited for the medical aid to be delivered, waited for it to be stored in the hospital on the third floor, and then attacked it with a missile. They are depriving civilians, non-combatants, people who have been the target of the Zionist fascist genocidal attack upon the people of Gaza, to then deprive them even further.
Saudi Arabia has blamed the Israeli regime for stalled Gaza ceasefire talks by making new demands.
That we have had, unfortunately, many false starts, many pronouncements of a near deal for a ceasefire in Gaza, only to be disappointed. And my understanding is that, you know, we have in most of those instances where the talks eventually collapsed, it has been because there have been new requirements or new demands added on the part of Israel. I hope that at this point we can finally reach a ceasefire that spares what is left of Gaza, the people of Gaza, and gives them an opportunity to finally see some peace.
Prince Faisal made the remarks at the Future Investment Initiative Institute in Riyadh. There are reports that the U.S., Egypt, and Qatar have proposed a 4-week ceasefire in Gaza, during which Hamas would release up to 10 Israeli captives. Hamas says it wants a lasting ceasefire that would lead to the full withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza, but the regime has insisted on maintaining control over parts of the territory, including key corridors. The Gaza ceasefire efforts have been ongoing over the past year. Yemenis have once again held nationwide rallies to show their unwavering support for the Palestinian and Lebanese people. They also expressed their support for the Yemeni army's anti-Israel operations. Our correspondent Yusuf Mowry joined us earlier from the venue of the protest in the capital Sana'a with more details.
The protesters are also praising and hailing the Ansarullah leader's latest declaration that the military operations in the Red Sea will continue to expand further and further, and that Yemen's armed and naval forces will soon introduce and reveal just how powerful the new torpedo, the remotely controlled torpedo, which is able to travel a total distance of 60 kilometers. Most torpedoes are only able to travel 20 to 40 kilometers, while the Yemeni torpedo manufactured and domestically manufactured here in Yemen is able to travel double and even triple that distance. They are warning, the Ansar al-Amn movement is warning, that the torpedo will sink ships as opposed to just damaging ships. So if it is used and leveraged in the near future, which Ansar al-Amn is threatening to do, it will deliver devastating damage to the vessels, because it will target the lower bottom half of the vessel, which will eventually lead it to sink into the bottom of the ocean. And this is part of the military escalations, round five of military escalations, which the Ansar al-Amn movement has been threatening for months to step up their attacks if the genocide continues.
On the first leg of his South American tour, Iran's Minister of Information and Communications Technology, Sattar Hashemi, has arrived in the Venezuelan capital, Caracas, for an intensive two-day visit. During his stay, Hashemi has signed two cooperation agreements between Iranian and Venezuelan companies. The agreements are focused on the construction of an optical fiber plant and the production of telecommunications equipment. Following his visit to Venezuela, Hashemi is scheduled to travel to Cuba, where he will sign a memorandum of understanding aimed at enhancing postal relations between the two nations. Hashemi is also expected to attend the 40th Havana ICT exhibition there. The exhibition will showcase the latest scientific advancements from companies across more than 50 countries. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says his country will sign the much-anticipated strategic partnership agreement with Iran in the near future.
The upcoming Russian-Iranian agreement on comprehensive strategic cooperation is set to become a serious factor in strengthening relations between Russia and Iran. As I said, the agreement is being prepared for signing in the nearest future. It will stress the aspiration of both countries for closer defense cooperation as well as collaboration for the sake of regional and global peace and security.
Lavrov's remarks came as Russian President Vladimir Putin last month approved the signing of the agreement with Iran. Putin has invited Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian to visit Russia to ink the cooperation agreement. Putin has called Moscow-Tehran ties a priority for his country. Iran and Russia, as two close allies both targeted by Western sanctions, have deepened their relations in various fields. Western governments have expressed concern over the growing friendship as it runs counter to their policies. The Democratic People's Republic of Korea has tested a new intercontinental ballistic missile that flew higher and further than its previous projectiles. North Korean media say the missile was the country's newest and most advanced solid-fuel ICBM. They also hailed it as the world's strongest strategic missile. It flew for nearly 90 minutes, the longest flight time yet for a North Korean missile. The country's leader, Kim Jong-un, oversaw the launch. He said the missile test was an appropriate military action, sending a message to rivals that threaten the DPRK's security. Kim accused them of intentionally escalating the regional situation. Following the launch, officials from the U.S. and South Korea held talks and agreed to take what they called strong response measures. Well, for more on that story, we're now joined by Jennifer Chang, joining us from the South Korean capital, Seoul. Jennifer, what details do you have to share with us with regards to this ICBM missile launch, the comments coming from the North Korean leader, and also what kind of a response are you expecting to see from the likes of the U.S. and South Korea?
The Koreans were very, very proud of this ICBM. It's been dumped. Asong 19, and it's a big improvement over the last ICBM test involving a Hwasong 18 ICBM, which was done in December of last year. This new missile is much bigger. It flew much further, much higher, in other words, at a higher altitude, than the previous ICBM in December of last year. So experts say that this will carry a heavier payload. It can carry more nuclear warheads that can separate and hit separate targets in the U.S. It's more agile. It's a much more powerful and fearsome weapon. And the U.S. and South Korea are at a loss as to what to do. The South Koreans tried to impose unilateral sanctions on entities they say helped North Korea with its latest ICBM. But none of those sanctions have stopped the North from developing bigger and better ICBMs that just set more records as time passes. And the U.S., all they could do was ask China for help. Well, China these days is not too keen on helping the U.S. because the U.S. is taking the side of Taiwan, a country that is not really a country. They say they're a country, but they are technically part of China. And China has said that if Taiwan tries to assert independence, it will invade Taiwan and make sure that it stays part of China. So this is causing a great deal of friction between China and the U.S., and China has not been terribly helpful toward the U.S. in settling matters between South Korea and North Korea due to the Taiwan issue. So the U.S. and South Korea are basically helpless, while North Korea just keeps getting stronger and stronger. It is now sending troops over to Ukraine, thousands of troops dressed in Russian uniforms and equipped with Russian military equipment to fight in the Kursk region. And the U.S. and South Korea are basically helpless to do anything about this. The U.S. presidential election is nearing, and they are just, you know, unable to do anything about this. Either candidate, whoever wins, Trump or Harris, they are not going to be able to do anything about the growing North Korean nuclear might. And of course, there is concern about what Russia would do to reciprocate in exchange for these North Korean troops fighting for them in the Ukraine region. You know, they could supply North Korea with fighter jets, for instance, with even better nuclear technology, better missile technology, and so on. Spy satellites, for instance, they could also give to North Korea. So the possibilities are endless, and the U.S. and the U.S.-led allies are helpless to do anything about what appears to be the waning hegemony of the U.S.
All right, thanks a lot. Jennifer Chang joining us from the South Korean capital, Seoul. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. Salam and welcome to our latest episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. In our last edition of Path Towards Enlightenment, we started explanation of Surah Abbas, and today we complete it. It is number 80 in the serial order of the compilation of the Noble Quran. Revealed in Mecca, it has 42 ayahs, and its title, which means "He frowned," is from the first word of the first ayah. It focuses on important topics, such as the significance of the Noble Quran, thanklessness towards the blessings of God, the certainty of resurrection, and the fate of the believers and unbelievers on that day. According to the Prophet, the one who studies Surah Abbas will arrive at the gathering place on the day of resurrection, smiling and rejoicing. Let us start from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, and 32.
فَلْيَنْظُرِ الْإِنسَانُ إِلَىٰ طَعَامِهِ أَنَّا صَبَبْنَا الْمَاءَ صَبَّا ثُمَّ شَقَقْنَا الْأَرْضَ شَقًّا فَأَنْبَتْنَا فِيهَا حَبًّا وَعِنَبًا وَقَضْبًا وزيتونا ونخلا وحدائق غلبا وفاكهة وأبا متاعا لكم ولأنعامكم.
So let man observe his food. We poured down water plenteously. Then we split the earth into fishes, and made the grain grow in it, and grapes and vegetables, olives and date palms, and densely planted gardens, fruits and pastures, as a sustenance for you and your livestock. If you remember, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah,
A couple of weeks ago, we referred to the Noble Quran as the greatest of all books, whose sincere recitation enlightens the mind and purifies the soul, resulting in the proper progress of persons and societies that refrain from indecencies and evil deeds. We also said, by pointing to the low beginning of every person from a drop of seminal fluid and the end of life that turns the body into a stinking corpse, that arrogance and thanklessness towards the bounties of the Almighty Creator leads to disbelief, deviation, and distortion of facts. Therefore, in order to firm up our beliefs regarding resurrection for the final judgment, we should reflect on the innumerable opportunities and facilities provided by God to discern the straight and unwavering path towards paradise. The ayahs that we recited to you now focus on our food and the factors in its procurement, such as rainfall, the splitting of the soil for sowing of seeds from which grows grain, and all kinds of vegetables and fruits in the gardens we plant, and the pastures around us that provide sustenance to us and our animals. Water, in fact, is the elixir of life, without which neither we can quench our thirst nor grow plants and raise livestock. Moreover, the food we eat should be hygienic and lawfully procured, rather than from unhealthy plants, unclean animals, and forbidden sources. The food mentioned here and the factors involved in its procurement have also a wider meaning and not limited to the mere filling of stomachs, in view of the fact that the human being is a combination of the physical body and the spiritual soul. It refers to our natural quest for intellectual and ideological growth and the proper manner in determining the righteousness of our thoughts, words, and deeds, which ought not be incorrect or from perverted sources. In other words, thoughts and beliefs are the food of our spirit and mind, and we should be careful in acquiring them from the purified and authentic sources for proper development of our intellectual capabilities, similar to the hygienic diet that is necessary for the healthy nourishment of our body. A saying from Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him, the Prophet's elder grandson and his second infallible successor, reads, "I wonder at some people who think about their bodily food but do not care for their soul sustenance. They avoid eating harmful food but fill their hearts with fatal materials." These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, gluttony in eating and drinking habits or procurement of food through unlawful means from unclean sources prevent a person from proper thinking, intellectual growth, and the path towards perfection, reducing his or her position to mere animalistic levels. Number two, rainfall, growth of plants, their decay, and regrowth through the cycle of seasons provide ample proofs for us for life, death, and the day of resurrection. And number three, the Noble Quran has mentioned the names of certain fruits, which is an indication of their benefits as nutrients, in addition to their unique and delicious taste. Conclude this week's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment, and with it, the completion of Surah Abbas, by listening to the last 10 ayahs, that is 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40, 41, and 42.
فإذا جاءت الصاخة يوم يفر المرء من أخيه وأمه وأبيه وصاحبته وبنيه لكل امرئ منهم يومئذ شأن يغنيه وجوه يومئذ مسفرة ضاحكة مستبشرة ووجوه يومئذ عليها غبرة ترهقها قترة أولئك هم الكفرة الفجرة.
So when the deafening cry comes, the day when a man will evade his brother, his mother and his father, his spouse and his sons, that day each of them will have a task to keep him preoccupied. That day some faces will be bright, laughing and joyous, and some faces on that day will be covered with dust, overcast with gloom. It is they who are the faithless, the vicious ingrates. These ayahs portray the scene of resurrection in order to awaken our senses and conscience regarding the eventual fate of all human beings, for whom no bond of family and friendship will be of any avail. The deafening cry or the blast of the heavenly trumpet will make people come out alive from the graves in a state of shock and bewilderment that makes them oblivious of everything, even the recognition of their nearest and dearest kin. With everyone running helter-skelter, every person will be preoccupied in his or her own fate without bothering about others and unable to help each other. The faces of the true believers, of course, will be bright on Resurrection Day, beaming with happiness for having achieved salvation in line with their firm belief in the promise of the Almighty Creator conveyed through the prophets and the infallible Imams he had sent for guidance. The reward is the eternal bliss of paradise. As for the faces of the disbelievers, the deviants, and the unrepentant sinners, these will be gloomy, blackened with dust, and in the state of total sorrow for having rejected the commandments of the all-merciful Lord and for their life of unbridled sins such as atheism, polytheism, wanton pleasures of the flesh, oppression, lies, deceit, and all other evils. The blazing fires of hell is their destination for their lack of faith, unrepentant sins, and thanklessness towards the bounties of the Almighty Creator. From these ayahs, we learn that, number one, the family structure is broken up on the day of resurrection. Number two, the joyous and happy people on Resurrection Day are those who had reflected on their future during the transient life of the mortal world without allowing the kinship or bonds of family and friendship to drag them toward perversion and doom. And number three, the inward darkness of faithlessness and unrepentant sins fully manifests itself on the faces of the evil persons on the day of resurrection. Well, dear listeners, on that note, we come to the end of this Friday's episode of Path Towards Enlightenment. God bless you and goodbye until our next episode and the start of Surah Takfir.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, at all costs, avoid alcoholic beverages in our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, what an honor to be here on A to Z, and we're talking about this beautiful, blessed, pure, this godly and divine Islamic lifestyle, which will and can lead to this spiritual perfection, and even perfection in the very world that we live in. So we're talking about how we need to avoid at all costs alcoholic beverages in our Islamic lifestyle. Now, I understand that this is something which is very, clear. It is something that is very blatant, and it is something that everybody knows. But unfortunately, you know, despite knowing that we should not drink alcoholic beverages, God forbid, there are situations where some Muslims do end up engaging in the drinking of alcohol. And so this is just a humble reminder to everybody. And if you know somebody, please remind them as well. So alcoholic beverages, of course, is something which is prohibited. It is completely haram. It is prohibited by the Almighty Allah very seriously, very severely, and it's something that really, I guess, you can't joke about the situation. So, for example, in one of the traditions, it is related that an individual who drinks, their prayers are not accepted for 40 days or 40 nights. And along these lines, in some places, it is also considered to be one of the major sins. And if it's not considered to be a major sin, a greater sin, then it definitely is very close to being a major sin. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how we need to avoid alcoholic beverages at all costs when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. As we have said in some of our previous programs, you know, that the Islamic lifestyle is made up of primarily two components: those things which you should do and those things which you shouldn't do. These two aspects come together and they create this Islamic lifestyle. And of course, that Islamic lifestyle is what leads towards prosperity, salvation, happiness, joy, bliss, cheerfulness, not only in the next life, in the hereafter, in the eternal world, but as well as this world itself. So we reap the rewards both here and there. Now, when it comes to alcoholic beverages and how important it is to abstain and stay away from them, it's interesting. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alayhi, he was speaking to Imam Ali alayhi salam, and he said to Imam Ali alayhi salam that whoever abandons alcohol for other than the sake of Allah, Allah will quench that person in paradise with the great drinks of paradise. And so if you notice here, it said if somebody abandons alcohol for other than the sake of Allah. So interestingly, Imam Ali alayhi salam, he asked this very same questions. He says, for other than Allah, right? Because it makes sense that you would abandon it for the sake of Allah. And because you abandoned it for the sake of Allah, Allah will quench your thirst in paradise. But the Prophet had said that for other than the sake of Allah. And so then the Prophet, peace and blessings upon him, replies, yes, by Allah, even if a person abandons alcohol for his own protection and his own well-being, meaning for other than the sake of Allah, then Allah will quench their thirst in paradise. So by all means, stay away. And if you know somebody who does this, unfortunately, help him to stay away as well. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
The Los Angeles Times' billionaire owner Patrick Soon-Shiong has blocked his newspaper from endorsing Kamala Harris to protest her support at Israel's genocidal war in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The New York Times has covered this story and tells us more. The daughter of the Los Angeles Times owner says the newspaper's recent refusal to endorse U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris was due to the Democratic presidential candidate's support for Israel's genocidal war against Palestinians of Gaza. The daughter of the Los Angeles Times owner, Nika Soon-Shiong, a 31-year-old activist, in an interview with The Los Angeles Times on Saturday, 26th of October, said that her father's decision to block the Los Angeles Times' endorsement of Kamala Harris stemmed from the candidate's pro-Israel stance on Gaza. She said, "Our family made the joint decision not to endorse a presidential candidate. This was the first and only time I have been involved in the process. As a citizen of a country openly financing genocide, and as a family that experienced South Africa's apartheid regime, the endorsement was an opportunity to repudiate justifications for the widespread targeting of journalists and the ongoing war on children in Gaza. The revelation was made after the owner of the Los Angeles Times, Patrick Soon-Shiong, in a surprise decision, blocked plans to endorse Kamala Harris, igniting outrage within the newspaper and leading to a wave of pro-Israeli readers cancelling their subscriptions. Three members of the Los Angeles Times editorial board who supported the Israeli regime's assault on Gaza also resigned over the decision. Nika Soon-Shiong took to her ex-social media account and addressed the controversy and confusion over the Los Angeles Times' decision not to endorse a presidential candidate, stating in a post that genocide is the line in the sand. She wrote, "This is not a vote for Donald Trump," adding, "This is a refusal to endorse a candidate that is overseeing a war on children. I'm proud of the Los Angeles Times' decision." She stressed that apartheid, illegal settlements and genocide in Palestine are profitable too, underpinned by United States' arms dealers witnessing record profits. Northrop Grumman's stock is up 28%. General Dynamics shares are up 37%. Lockheed Martin's shares are up 55%. The Los Angeles Times is not alone in announcing an 11th-hour reversal on endorsement precedents. On Friday, 25th of October, the Washington Post shared that it would not endorse a candidate in this or any future presidential election. Israel launched its brutal war on Gaza, which has so far massacred more than 43,000 Palestinians, in October of last year, after a Palestinian resistance movement, Hamas, waged a surprise Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against the occupying regime. Since then, the United States has supplied the Tel Aviv regime with more than 10,000 tons of military equipment and used its veto power at the UN Security Council to shield Israel from any Security Council resolutions. The American newspaper The New York Post has also covered the same story. The Los Angeles Times' billionaire owner Patrick Soon-Shiong blocked his newspaper from endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris to protest her support for Israel's genocidal war in Gaza. Nika Soon-Shiong, a 31-year-old political activist, has been accused in the past of having an undue influence at the paper, where she has no formal role. The younger Soon-Shiong said in a statement, "Our family made the joint decision not to endorse a presidential candidate. This was the first and only time I have been involved in this process." She then charged the Israeli regime with committing genocide in Gaza. Nika Soon-Shiong's charges echo pro-Palestine campus activists who have dogged both President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris on the campaign trail. Earlier this month, Kamala Harris appeared to agree with an activist who charged Israel with committing genocide, which her campaign later denied. In an interview with his own newspaper, Patrick Soon-Shiong was more circumspect, saying the decision was not a result of any single issue. He told the Los Angeles Times, "The process was to decide how do we actually best inform our readers, and there could be nobody better than us who to try to sift the facts from fiction whilst leaving it to the readers to make their own final decision." Just days after the Los Angeles Times' decision, Amazon billionaire Jeff Bezos and the Washington Post also withheld the Washington Post's planned endorsement of Kamala Harris. The decisions precipitated full-scale meltdown in both newsrooms. Recently, a top aide to Kamala Harris says the Democratic presidential nominee does not support an arms embargo on Israel, denying an assertion by a pro-Palestinian group organization that she's open to discussing the issue. Phil Gordon, Kamala Harris's national security advisor, wrote on X, "Kamala Harris does not support an arms embargo on Israel." Phil Gordon added, "She has been clear in that she will always ensure Israel is able to defend itself." The remarks came just a day after the Uncommitted National Movement, which is critical of US President Joe Biden's support for Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, said its co-founders had spoken with Kamala Harris at a campaign rally in the city of Detroit, Michigan. Detroit is home to many Muslim and Arab American voters. It added, Leila al-Abed and Abbas al-Alawiya shared their concerns about the US supplying weapons for Israel's war and occupation against Palestine, and requested a meeting with Kamala Harris to discuss an arms embargo on the Israeli regime. The group further said, the vice president shared her sympathies and expressed an openness to a meeting with the uncommitted leaders to discuss an arms embargo. However, Phil Gordon rejected the report, sparking a response from the Uncommitted National Movement. The group said in a statement, it's exactly because the current White House policy allows bombs to flow to Netanyahu unconditionally that he has been emboldened to kill tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians. We found hope in Vice President Harris expressing an openness to meeting about an arms embargo, and we are eager to continue engaging because people we love are being killed with American bombs. Also recently, Kamala Harris drew attention to Palestinians' plight in Gaza in a move that some analysts believe was a rhetorical departure from Joe Biden's pro-Israel statements. She told reporters after a meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington, "The images of dead children and desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety, sometimes displaced for the second, third or fourth time, we cannot look away in the face of these tragedies. We cannot allow ourselves to become numb to these suffering, and I will not be silenced." However, the remarks from Kamala Harris's advisor, Phil Gordon, suggest that she would not support a complete halt to arms transfers to Israel. The United States remains the Israeli regime's most important ally and biggest supplier of weapons. It has provided the Israeli regime with weapons and intelligence support during the Gaza war and blocked the United Nations resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. You have just listened to The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM, 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir, and now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Every night and every day, every night and every day, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah, never forget to say, La ilaha illallah.
IRIB English Radio, a herald of unity and solidarity amongst Islamic denominations.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. May God bless you all. And today we have a beautiful hadith. Actually, let me start with a story. That, you know, one day, once, Harun al-Rashid, one of the cruel and very, like, ruthless caliphs or caliphs of Abbasid caliphs, he ordered his soldiers, his people, to find a person, obviously an elderly person, who has met the Holy Prophet. You know the distance, the time between Harun and the Holy Prophet was much, you know, a long time. A long time ago the Holy Prophet was martyred. Anyway, they found an elderly, an old person who had met the Holy Prophet. And Harun wanted to hear a hadith, that old person to quote a hadith that he, had heard the Holy Prophet directly. He wanted a direct quotation. So they found the man, they brought him to Harun, and the old man said that, I heard the Holy Prophet saying that the children of Adam, Bani Adam, they get old, but two things become younger in them, stronger in them. What are those two? One is greed, and one is the wishful, you know, inaccessible, far-fetched wishes. So greed, right? Then Harun, gave a prize to the old man. The old man asked, "Is this for only this year, or everywhere you're going to give me something like this?" And Harun laughed and said, "Yeah, indeed, the Holy Prophet has told the truth. What truth? The elderly." When the children of Adam, they get old, the older they get, the younger the greed becomes in them. And in another very profound hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, for which I've seen many cases, many instances, he says, greed is to ask something very, very tiny and very small and, petty things, in exchange for something very great. So you see, greedy people, they humiliate themselves, they belittle themselves, they embarrass themselves for little things. Because our personality, our character, us as human beings, we are so great, we are so valuable, but we belittle others, ourselves, for little things. Inshallah, we would not be greedy, and we would not belittle ourselves. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Danesh, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
In a week, it will be 13 months that the Israeli regime has been systematically turning entire Gaza Strip's 360 square kilometers of land into a heap of rubble, an onslaught that has not spared women, including mothers, children, including infants, doctors, paramedics, journalists, homes, hospitals, shelters, or places of worship. And now, after expanding its bloodshed into Lebanon, we see it is not just Palestinians that the Zionists are at odds with. In short, if you are in West Asia and not Jewish, the Israeli war machine is coming for you. And the regime's brutality and its Western-issued license to kill with impunity is the focus of Spotlight. Joining us now for the program is Zadwan Rizk, a political analyst, joining us from Beirut. And Kim Sharif, activist and lawyer, joining us from London. Hello to the both of you and welcome to the program. I guess, Ms. Sharif, we'll start with you. We'll do the gentlemanly thing and start in London. Your initial thoughts on the UN Special Rapporteur, Kim, on occupied Palestinian territories. She had a lot to say this week. Francesca Albanese, one of the things she said about 4 days ago, she said the Israeli regime's campaign of genocide in Gaza is not just restricted to Palestinians in Gaza. By all accounts, she strongly believes it will spread ultimately to the occupied West Bank, because she said it's all part of a broader systematic plan to kill off or push every single Palestinian, every last Palestinian, off of their land. Your initial thoughts?
Yes, good evening to you both. And I totally agree with her. It's just harrowing to listen to her findings and detailed analysis of the law as it stands, international law, that is. And it's just shocking to see how much campaign of harassment and maltreatment she has been facing for standing up and telling the truth and analyzing the law as it is. She's an expert on the matter, and she's absolutely right. She used the term, this is a project of colonial erasure, meaning basically, as you quite rightly pointed out, it's spreading out. And there are rumors among Arab political analysts that the next plan, the next step is after Beirut, after Lebanon, is Jordan itself. And the Zionist regime has never made it a secret that it has always had an ambitious plan to expand throughout the Arabian Peninsula, literally, and going all the way to Basra, in the words of one of their own ministers on a TV interview. And the methods they are using in terms of If you analyze the actual activities carried out by the IOF, you will see